Welcome to the Shelf Shedding Movie Show. I'm your host, Jason Dubray. In this episode, I'm going solo again. I'm going to talk about my March delivery for my Vinegar Syndrome subscription. I was quite negative on the February episode, and I will tell you that the March was not a great start, and I was a little bit concerned, but then eventually things got a little bit better. So as it happens, as I talk about the four movies that were delivered to me this month, each one got better than the next, which is ultimately a good thing. So I'm just going to go through each one, and I will tell you whether I would shed it from my movie collection or if I'm going to shelve it and keep it. And the first movie is called Singapore Sling. Singapore Sling is from 1990. It's a dark noir-inspired film directed by Nikos Nikolaidis. Story follows a detective played by Panos Theoseos, who is searching for his missing lover, a woman named Laura. His investigation leads him to a mansion where he encounters a disturbed mother-daughter duel played by Meredith Harold and Michelle Valley. And then the two women living in a bizarre and macabre relationship hold the detective captive, leading to a series of unsettling and erotic events. The film is known for its unique blend of genres, mixing elements of film noir, erotic thriller, and horror. I'm not going to spend much time on this movie. I outright hated it. It was the thing that annoyed me more about it is I can say some nice things about it. It's so well shot. It's got the whole noir look. And there is a decent performance in here by the character who plays the daughter, played by Michelle Valley. Really good. They have these asides to the audience kind of throughout this really kind of sickening movie, but those are all well acted, and there's a bit of an appropriate sarcastic edge there too. And then there's another language, there's kind of the film noir type of background voiceover that you would expect, but This movie is really, I guess I shouldn't be too judgmental, but for my taste, it was just too much and involves, I don't even want to get into it. If you like an extreme exploitation film involving graphic sex and kind of disgusting scenes with food and throwing up, and it's just really and repeated over and over again at a painful almost 2 hour running time, this was by far the toughest Vinegar Syndrome movie I've had to get through this year. This is an easy one. This is definitely leaving my collection, no matter how much I feel about the other ones. So that's all the time I want to spend on Singapore Sling. I guess if it's your thing, look it up and see. But I don't really recommend this to many people in my life to check out. Our second movie, there was two movies in kind of this this combined disc. But I thought, here I go again, because the covers kind of show, it seems like, kind of exploitation, violence against women type of stuff, and I thought, oh great, is this all that this month's collection of movies is going to be? And I know, you know, Vinegar Syndrome works in this way, and they do have a lot of exploitation films, and there's a certain subsect of that there for sure. Again, not as much my thing. I was relieved that the two movies actually had a bit of a story, and you know, I think there's some sex scenes and some nudity, but it wasn't about that. It was still about the story. First one I watched is a movie called Spectres.
We don't know what we're going to find when we go down there. But of one thing we can be certain, that's the writing on the tombstone. Those words serve as a message. Invoked or not invoked, evil will come.
What is it about this city that keeps you here?
I don't know.
It never ceases to amaze me. And this time, we're onto something really big. Frankly, I've never seen anything like this.
Go now, flee the city before evil, which is tired of hiding in the bowels of the earth, decides to wake. Leave before the sinister howls of the phantoms engulf us all.
It's from 1987. It's a horror movie. It's directed by Marcello Avalone, and it revolves around a team of archaeologists. They're led by Professor Lansky, portrayed by John Pepper, who discovers an ancient Etruscan tomb in Italy. The film is dubbed into English, but there are some English-speaking actors. I'll get to one famous one in a moment. They discover this tomb in Italy. And alongside him is his assistant, Barbara, played by Katrine Mikkelsen, and a journalist named Laurie, portrayed by Donald Pleasance. Donald Pleasance, famously of the Halloween franchise, as well as many others, Prince of Darkness, John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness, which has been reviewed in a movie I quite like, Phenomena. He's a welcome presence in the movie and delivers the best performance. As they delve deeper into the tomb, they unwittingly unleash multiple malevolent spirits, leading to a series of terrifying and supernatural events and some pretty good kind of creature feature horror setups. The film combines elements of mystery and horror together, set against the backdrop of this eerie archaeological site and just kind of a great kind of Italian background for the film, which works well. Yeah, I got a little bit of like a Max von Sydow in The Exorcist vibe from Donald Pleasance in this role. He often kind of plays roles similar to this. It wasn't a stretch for him, but again, I like seeing that guy in movies. He can make some pretty melodramatic stuff sound somewhat credible, or he plays to the genre really well. But the issue with this one is it's a thumbs down review simply because the writing is bad, the acting is bad. You've got like this a series of colorful characters. There's a guide at this when this group of of students go on a field trip, and through these catacomb areas, they have a guide who is blind, but he seems to have these extra superpowers. And after this one kind of melodramatic scene where this couple goes off on their own and then, you know, they get injured and he comes to the rescue, and then he disappears from the movie, and then he shows up at a really convenient time to, you know, kind of come to the rescue. But it's, you know, it's kind of like he's playing a little bit of a version of the Dick Hallerman character in The Shining at points in this movie. And I just don't think any of that necessarily worked. There's a corrupt antiquities dealer in there who you can predict what's going to happen to him. A tons of subplots going on. It really kind of drags in places, considering like supernatural horror movies usually move at a good pace and are they're almost leaving you wanting more. This one kind of went a little bit long in some ways. It didn't drag as much as the previous film I referred to. They do a few homages. There's this really cool shadow shot of the creature. It's a bit of an homage to Nosferatu. Lots of practical gore effects. Again, I'm starting to appreciate that a lot more than the CGI. Here's a scene where a character gets sucked into a bed. Again, homage to Nightmare on Elm Street. So it's very aware that it's in the 80s, and this is the kind of horror stuff that's worked well in the United States and kind of being used in this Italian film with a cast of actors from all over. There's also a subplot involving this actress, and she has this workaholic boyfriend. The workaholic boyfriend, of course, is the leader of this archaeological team. That relationship is kind of strange. They're together. They seem to really love each other, but then he just kind of treats her like she's nothing at points, and she has a lot of like kind of screaming scenes and very melodramatic stuff. I think if you like the idea of this, check it out. I wouldn't steer people away from it. It just didn't work for me. I kept thinking of a much better 1990s film, similar idea, called The Relic. That one's a little bit more, a more fun version of this story, and is worth people's time. Spectres is not an offensive or outright bad film. In fact, but it just kind of sits there. It just doesn't seem to have the energy that I would expect from it, especially, you know, you have Donald Pleasance, and normally he's bringing as much energy as he possibly can, but the rest of the cast doesn't completely work. They can kind of go from scene to scene, and the script is very meandering, I think, and so there's ways it could have been focused a little bit more. The second movie, directed by the same person, Marcello Avalone, is called Maya.
The Mayans used to say that a border exists between our world and the world of a reflected image. It's the border between life and death.
Behind these deaths, there's a ritual, which is part of an ancient legend, where anything is possible.
They've killed four people in that way. We're partly to...
They've killed people this way for thousands of years.
The local shaman says there are two ways of looking in a mirror. There's a superficial way, and there's another way. One that goes beyond the reflected image. It's able to cross over that line beyond which life exists, just as death exists.
From 1989, fantasy adventure film, and it follows an American archaeologist. Again, this director obviously had an interest in archaeologists coming across kind of unique things which unleash supernatural powers. So the American archaeologist is John Baxter, played by William Berger, who discovers an ancient mystical artifact in a remote part of Mexico, and then has a daughter, Maya, but again, Mayan Riviera, portrayed by Marcella Valentini, He was inadvertently drawn into a supernatural journey when the artifact awakens long dormant spirits during the Day of the Dead celebrations. Maya delves deeper into the mystery. She's aided by a local historian, Alejandro, played by Peter Phelps. Together, they navigate the perils of both the spiritual and physical realms to prevent an ancient prophecy from unfolding. The film blends elements of fantasy, adventure, and Mexican cultural heritage. And I think, you know, in both cases of these two movies, they make good use of the country that they're in and the background. I really like the Mexican settings here. Again, a wide variety. There's some stock characters. We have these two really horrible guys. And I do feel bad for this one woman who has been having a relationship with this guy before this. The daughter of the archaeologist has come in, and you know, spoilers to after essentially her father has been killed and is trying to figure out what's going on, and suddenly his attention is drawn to her as opposed to this other woman who she's tough and she kind of runs this store, but. She, you know, she's having to deal with these American guys who come across the border and are really real jerks. And they're just like, it takes them a super long time before their predictable fate happens. But they go around and they just cause so much trouble and are so misogynistic. And it's really, you know, you're not supposed to like them there, but it doesn't spoil the meal. We don't have every character kind of acting like this. There's lots of interesting elements. I think the difference was the screenplay. This one was a little bit more focused. There's some fair amount of gore in it. Brings the red fairly early. There's characters who have fingers get shot off. It has a real good energy to it, and that's a difference as well. I think this was a better directed movie because it has this energy and kept me engaged pretty much through the whole thing there, and kind of restored my faith in this group of movies that I'd received in the mail. There's some interesting scenes. There's a scene, there's kind of this exorcism scene involving snakes coming out of a character's mouth, like, while people are like this exorcist or whatever is pouring tequila on this body and smoking cigars. It's very, very interesting. We have some characters who are a little bit exposition machines in there. There's a doctor who talks about the rituals connected to the murders, but also is kind of the one helping out there, but that provides the backstory for us there. You can sort of see that tactic in the screenplay. And there's a nice kind of this nice idea kind of through the beginning and throughout, this idea of this connection that the mirrors and mirrors kind of being a portal between the worlds of life and death, and especially around kind of saying it around the Day of the Dead. There's this blue out cinematography that happens in some scenes, which looks really, really good. There's the owner of this restaurant who, you know, he's kind of given up a little bit on his marriage, and he kind of gets motivated to reconnect with his wife, but has some, the drunk acting is not fantastic in there. But again, we spend enough time that we kind of like these characters, and like this is a guy who came down to strike it rich and kind of develop the land, but it hasn't worked out that well for him. And so there's compelling enough stuff in his character as well. And then there's some reveals late in the film that worked well. It was a well-edited film. And there's, again, this kind of this little girl who keeps appearing throughout the film. And I was kind of thinking, like, it's, what does this girl represent? Is like she a kind of a bridge to the world of the dead? Is she a villain? Is she an evil character? Because there's some very, very human qualities to this little girl, this character that keeps kind of appearing and reappearing, certainly at the beginning sequence with the archaeologist, and when he's, you know, concerned about something, and he goes to this site and leads to his unfortunate demise very, very early in the film. I think if you like this kind of supernatural, and I mentioned The Relic before, but this kind of supernatural horror, and you like the setting of Mexico and some of the cultural pieces around this, as I do, I really do think that Maya is an excellent film. And I mean, I was pretty much thinking this would be the top one I would be discussing in this group, because the first two had been weak, but especially the first one was just absolutely awful. This is a solid thumbs up review, a movie I quite enjoyed at a point when I didn't think I was going to get a good movie in this group of films. But now we come to the best film of the four that I'm talking about. It's Dr. Terror's House of Horrors.
Dr. Terror's House of Horrors. Horrors the screen has never before dared to depict. The terrifying horror of man killing blind with a human brain that creeps and kills. The terrifying horror of the dead, entombed for 200 years, that creeps its way back to terrorize the living. The terrifying horror of a dreaded man called Dr. Terror, who, with his deck of mystic cards, could foretell destiny. Dr. Terror's House of Horrors.
Directed by Freddie Francis. It's from 1965, and so it's along the lines of these kind of gothic British horror movies, and its story revolves around these passengers on a train who meet this enigmatic Dr. Schreck, played by the great Peter Cushing, who appeared in a lot of films. This is an Amicus production, not a Hammer production, but of course Peter Cushing appeared in a lot of Hammer horror movies as well during this time. He has a deck of tarot cards, and Dr. Schreck foretells the chilling fates awaiting each passenger on the train. They all seem interested in this except for one skeptical character, and the anthology piece is just basically acting out what their futures hold. There's an architect named Jim Dawson, played by Neil McCallum. He faces a vengeful spirit when he goes to this house, which is kind of this haunted house. I'm not sure that, like, the House of Horrors title comes from, but that's the only house I can think of. Like, I guess we're going to talk about another kind of more domestic house in a moment in the second story, but that first one, again, I wasn't enamored with it. I kind of knew everything that was going to happen. It's, you know, it was kind of a creepy family haunted house, and I predicted the plot twist ahead of when it's revealed, unfortunately. Next one was not fantastic, but it's about Gardener Bill Rogers, played by Alan Freeman, and he battles this deadly plant with this other friend of his who's an expert. Essentially, this vine that starts to take over the house. Again, an era of, you know, this is actually after Roger Corman did Little Shop of Horrors, but it's that type of idea. It doesn't end up talking to them, but it's... It kills characters, and we kind of see that story unfold. Again, I wasn't a huge fan of it. To me, it's almost like the equivalent in this anthology of the story in one of the Stephen King anthologies, where Stephen King starred in it, and he's the guy who gets covered. Entire house gets covered. He starts to become like this plant, and it's because of this alien force that's landed down there, that kind of idea. It was there. I mean, I've seen worse, but it was the weakest of the stories by far. Next one's about a jazz musician called Biff Bailey, played by Roy Castle, and he enters this voodoo curse after his band plays in Haiti, and he's kind of been joking about or breaking some rules when he watches this voodoo ceremony happen. There, he starts playing this music that's in this ritual, and then he gets in trouble for that, and then he's remembered it, and he plays the music at clubs, and then things go awry. It's kind of sits there, too. It's this Biff Bailey character seems way, way, way too stupid. He doesn't see all of the warnings. Of course, he doesn't realize that he's in a horror movie, but we do. So I guess we can forgive him that. He just seems like so unaware of what he's doing. And you think after kind of the first dramatic thing that happens that he wouldn't pursue this and continue on with what he's doing, but he does. And things kind of fall apart. The next one, and this is where the movie started to get cooking. This art critic, Franklin Marsh, and this is the guy who's been the most skeptical, and each time he's like, oh, brother, those tarot cards, what nonsense, you know, he's trying to scam you. Don't listen to this guy. So Franklin Marsh, played by Christopher Lee, is tormented by this disembodied hand, and he's gone a little bit too far with ripping apart this artist, and essentially this artist has placed a curse on him. And again, so with this disembodied hand, that might sound familiar. Oliver Stone's The Hand, Evil Dead 2, Idle Hands. This happens. This was years and years before any of those movies. So you can kind of see how those filmmakers had likely watched this anthology and saw how well this idea worked. And it was a fully developed story, and it worked really well. And I like the angle that it was a more skeptical, cynical person who had, after been worn down and then reluctantly agreed essentially to have this tarot card reading happen to him, and then how that's kind of changed him throughout hearing the story. And our last one, very familiar, still modern actor, you know, he's getting a little bit older there, but and we have Dr. Bob Carroll, played by the great Donald Sutherland, as very, very young Donald Sutherland. He discovers his new bride is a vampire. I was able to see that early on. And then I was thinking, oh, here we go. This is very predictable. But this story is deceptive. It is actually really, really, really good. I don't think it's quite as good as the Franklin Marsh art critic piece. That one's the best one of the lot. But it's deceptively brilliant what goes on in this story of this doctor and his new marriage, new wife. He was over, you know, he was in Europe and he married her and then brings her back to America. Each segment unravels with suspense and horror, and there's a surprising twist towards the end. I think I kind of knew what was going to happen with it because I've seen enough of these gothic horror films, but the ride is great. It is a pleasure of a movie. Easily the best, one of the best films, if not the best from so far from the entire Vinegar Syndrome group of films that I've received. So it started off really rough, but ultimately the March delivery was a lot better than the February delivery, where essentially I gave away and shed all of the movies from that delivery. So you can likely predict how my points are going to go. 1 point going to Singapore Sling, definitely shedding it from my collection. I have no interest in ever watching that movie or having anything to do with it again. Now, Spectres, as well as Maya, are connected to the same collection. Maya is so good, and Spectres, again, thumbs down, but it's, you know, not unwatchable. So Spectres is going to get 2 points. I'm giving 3 points to Maya, but I am going to keep that collection of those two movies, and I am going to shelve them and put them back into and keep them in my movie collection. But the class act of this group is Dr. Terror's House of Horrors. Again, I'm not crazy about the House of Horrors title. I would think I'd like a different title. It's a very misleading. I almost thought it was going to be something that was all set in this haunted house and involving some mad scientist or something like that. I'm kind of glad it wasn't. It was a very effective anthology, and using that train as the setting to bridge into the five stories, and two of the five stories were absolute masterpieces. Three were okay, but you know, they got better and better as it went on there. And so it's definitely a treasure, and definitely one that I'm going to be keeping in my movie collection. 4 points for that one. It was the best of the lot there. So essentially, I'm only getting rid of one from this delivery of Vinegar Syndrome films. So that's my overview of the four films, and I will start watching my April delivery and have a future show involving that. And I'm hoping, again, to kind of go on this kind of more positive track with the films there. But I knew kind of going in that it was going to vary, and some things would work well for me, and some things might not work well, and that certainly was the case here. I hope you enjoyed this very short episode of the Shelf Shedding Movie Show. Please also check out Friendly Podcasts, Rank and Review, A Lifetime of Hallmark, Schlock and Awe, and Film Feast. And please stay healthy, be kind to one another, and keep supporting the movies. And until next time, thank you for listening. Goodbye.